As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Go to theathletic.com/downtodunk and get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. With me today, as always on Wednesday, is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, what's up?
Hey, Andrew. This might be my flu game, Andrew.
Hey, Al.
Don't worry, I'm not actually sick. I don't have the flu, but I did eat spicy Thai food last night, and it is hitting me this second. That is why we're starting late.
This is why we're starting late. I think the Utah Jazz got the equivalent of spicy Thai food last night in the form of Dort.
Oh, Lou Dort, what a game, a Dorty 40.
We got ourselves a Dorty 40. I was so excited. When he had 38, it was just like, he's got to get 40. Like, we just have to make this happen, right? Oh, it just had to happen.
It was awesome. In fact, looking ahead for the rest of the season, it'd be fun if each night, to kind of keep us entertained, they just picked a player to try to set their career high in some statistical category. Wouldn't that be fun?
Right? That would be great.
If we were like, hey, Moses, let's see if you could get 30 rebounds. Let's just see if you can do it. Everyone, they tell all the other players so that they're helping him out. Is there someone you'd most like to see? Like, just either score a lot of points or...
I'm just thinking, which player would be the most difficult if they said, okay, you specifically, we want to get you 30 tonight.
Points.
Who would be the one where you'd be like, I don't think it's possible?
Let me look at their roster. I mean, at this point, maybe it's only like back end of the roster guys like Tony Bradley and Josh Hall. I mean, yeah. Kenrich could get 30 if he wanted to.
He could get 30.
Svee could get 30. I think Ty Jerome could get 30.
Yes. Tony Bradley? Could you get Tony Bradley 30?
That'd be tough. It'd have to be against a team that maybe like they're starting centers out so he can just dominate. You can just throw it down to him every single time down. He can just get a bunch of dunks.
You think he could do it against Washington?
And Rolo?
They really don't have any
You're
bigs.
A big Rolo fan.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
But yes, all that is to say that Dort had a wonderful night last night, scoring 42 points, 7 three-pointers, also a career high.
Seven for 11 from three. Unbelievable.
And he could have had more.
He shot better from three. Yeah, well, he should have had more. He shot better from three than he did for the free throw line last night. He was 3 of 7 from the free throw line.
So that if he had just shot perfect there, that should get you to 46. And then he had two layups at least. I was actually looking at his shot chart is very funny because he missed like 4 three-pointers, but then he also missed like 4 shots with almost within the restricted area. And one of those was a breakaway like layup attempt that he rocketed off the backboard and might not have even hit the rim on the way back. This is so strong. And then there was another one where he was wide open. So we legitimately had a shot at a 50-point game from Lou Dort, which God. That would have been really crazy. 40 is crazy enough.
40 is crazy enough. I live for a Dort 50 piece.
At this point, wouldn't you say it's coming? Because I don't think we can say that he's a good shooter, but he is definitely a streaky shooter. And when he's on, he's going to have these games where he just blows up from three.
Lu Dort scored 42 in a game, in a real game.
Against a good team and a good defense.
Against a good defense. And so the thing about it is, guys will get hot and score crazy amount of points. We saw Corey Brewer scored 50, right?
Yeah.
But that's just because he got really hot from three. And that's a part of the story with Lou. But he was hitting some shots that make you think, okay, maybe like this is a little bit different. He hit this, he drove the lane, got met by Rudy Gobert in the mid-range. Most guys would pass out, just be done, figure out the possession. He basically does this fadeaway, high arcing mid-range shot that goes in right over Rudy Gobert. It's like, okay, that's different.
Yeah.
he scored in a variety of ways. Not only did he have 42 points, but he had 4 steals, 3 assists, 7 boards, and he was guarding Donovan Mitchell and running through screens. I don't understand how he can expend the amount of energy that he does on the defensive end and then still take 31 shots. It really is different.
Yeah, and you would hope that on a like playoff Thunder team, they wouldn't be asking that much of him, obviously. Like it's fun to see his offensive development, but at the same time, it's like when this team is good, they're really going to need Dort on the defensive end and maybe as a secondary or tertiary creator and scorer on the offensive end. So it's fun to see these blow-up games. But yeah, like going forward, he can't, or you think that he can't do this every night. Who knows? Like you said, he has so much energy. And it's not just him. Like when he plays, the team plays differently. Like the team is so much more aggressive and so much more physical when Dort's out there on the court. I mean, there was a noticeable change from these last few weeks when you insert Dort into this lineup.
No doubt. They only lost by 10 in Utah.
Yeah.
They lose by 25 without him?
At least. I mean, the next highest score was 14 points.
I know. And he did take 31 shots to get there, which I loved. Like it's what I was disappointed that Poku wasn't playing, because Poku's been like one of the only reasons I watch, right?
Yeah.
He's been the only reason that a lot of people watch. Yeah, we could get Poku 40.
He could get 40 shots.
40 shots. I would love that. That'd be highly entertaining. But Lou provided something. You're right. He provided a spark on both ends for the team. Still, it was just the perfect game, right, for this time of year. Perfect game.
Yeah, it was.
You get entertainment, you lose the game, and you go to tankathon.com and you look today, and they're at the sixth spot. Washington has passed them, so it's great. And we have Cleveland. There are half a game back of Cleveland in the reverse standings, of course, and so. 5 seems possible, right?
It seems possible, but after seeing the way this team played last night with Dort, now you start looking at the schedule coming up and you're like, how many of these games are they going to win? Because the schedule immediate after the Jazz game, it lightens up in terms of the opponents. It doesn't lighten up in terms of the travel schedule. Like they have to play tonight. They had to fly back to Oklahoma City and play Golden State, who is looking better as of recently, but then they get Detroit, Toronto, Washington, Indiana, Washington.
And the good thing, Toronto hasn't looked better. Toronto's been banged up. They lost to a Hawks team last night that didn't have Trae Young.
Yeah.
So that's not good. But Washington has played better lately at times. Uh-huh. Detroit is definitely a try-hard team that has played better lately too. So who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? And, but it's
I don't know that we're going to get a Dorty 40 every night.
We might not. Hopefully, but hopefully we can get a 40 from Poku if he comes back. Yes. Does he have a he have like a significant injury, or is it more of like a bruise?
I don't think so. I honestly, I don't know. Okay. I mean, after Baisley's bout with his fractured scapula,
I know.
We just didn't really know.
I called it a contusion.
Right? Yeah, I would definitely tell you, Alex, if I broke my scapula that I did that and not just say I just got a bruise.
Yeah. Of course, because breaking a scapula seems awful.
There are very few things that I just don't want to have. I don't know, man. Like, that is, it's odd, right? It's a little odd.
I want to go back. Obviously, Dort had a great game. But his his difficulties at the rim did stand out to me last night. And I think it's worth talking about when we're thinking about his offensive development in the future. And so if people aren't aware, Dort has not been very good at layups this year or just in the restricted area in general. So if you go on to NBA.com on their stats section and you sort just by all the guards in the league, what are they shooting in the restricted area? And I set a filter for you have to have at least three shots in that area per game in the restricted area. He's one of the worst in the league. Like he's bottom five. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, he's actually down there with some people that you might think would be good. Like Fred VanVleet is down there, which I thought was interesting. Fred VanVleet is shooting like just above 50% on those shots.
Interesting.
I've been delaying this whole time because I had to bring it back up on my computer. And I thought I was about to do it perfectly and time it exact, but I didn't.
Well, I can tell you last night, he shot better from three than he did in the restricted area.
Yeah, he did.
He was 7 for 11 from three last night, and he was 3 of 9 in the restricted area last night.
But one of the things that I noticed, and it was actually on a play that he scored, it was like with 5 minutes left to go in the game, he got a steal and had a breakaway attempt. He could have dunked it. But he did like a weird, not even like a traditional layup going up on the side one way or the other. He just did like both hands up and it almost didn't go in. It looked dicey. And so that made me think like, have I seen Dort dunk that much? And so I went on to basketballreference.com. Andrew, how many players on the team do you think have more dunks this season than Lugans Dort? One of the most athletic 12? Players on this team.
12?
It's 9, but he's behind guy. He's 6 dunks on this season.
He has less
than Svi, who's only been with the team for 13 games.
Svi's been a dunking machine.
It's just so weird that Dort, who is so athletic, just doesn't dunk. And when you saw it... in that play when he was wide open, there was like a scramble and he suddenly had the ball and was just right under the rim and he missed it because he didn't go up for a dunk. He was trying to do like a layup, a pressured layup, and it bounced out. It's strange because we call the show Down to Dunk and then we call it Down to Dort, and so I've associated Dort and dunk in my head. Turns out Dort doesn't really dunk.
Dort is not down to dunk.
He's not down to dunk.
Clearly.
Is it a problem, Andrew?
He's clearly not. Shea has more dunks, and I can't picture a Shea dunk in my head if I tried, right?
Yeah, Shea has 10 dunks, double digits.
Double digit dunks. Yeah, the dunk rankings. Moses Brown, number one, 46 dunks in 24 games. That's pretty awesome, actually. Isaiah Roby, which I think is predictable. He's been one of the best dunkers on the team this year. Baisley has 27 dunks on the season. And then Hami, who's no longer with us, had 19 in that time. And then we've got our lower level dunkers. So, yeah, that is something.
It's weird.
I don't know what to think of it.
He can dunk.
It's strange. I mean, obviously, he's done it this year.
Yeah, 6 times.
6 times. That's it.
It's just like watching him in that game last night, he can get to the rim whenever he wants. He can at least get deep in the paint whenever he wants because he's so strong and he has a lot of burst for a guy his size. And most, if you're putting like a smaller guard on him, like he's going to be able to bully him all the way to the rim. And so if he could unlock that, and someone brought it up on Twitter last night that this is kind of what we saw from Russell Westbrook early in his career. If you go back to his stats, in his rookie season, shots in the restricted area, Russ shot like 47%. And then in his second year, he shot about 52%, which is what Dort is shooting this year. And so I do think it's a skill he could develop. And if he did develop it, like if he just got up to like where Shea is right now, Shea's around like 61%. If he got around there, like that would significantly unlock his, I mean, he could become like a 17, 18 point per game scorer if that happened.
Yep. And I think it's certainly possible. He's still extremely young. And guys just usually get better, especially with, and a lot of this is like body control and confidence and timing. And I think that kind of, some of that stuff comes with time. And, you know, Lou is 21 years old. He's almost 22. He still has a lot of room for development. And he's, I'm still shocked at the development that he's had to this point, though. I mean, it's astonishing.
Oh, I was thinking, like, because I am in agreement. I think we're in agreement that we would like Dort to be on this team going forward. Like, we would like the next good Thunder team to have Dort on it. But I was just thinking about him as a trade asset and how much he would be worth to a, like, contending team. Because not only are you getting a great defender, you're also getting him on a super cheap contract where you don't necessarily have to give up a lot other than picks. And there's no reason in my head why he wouldn't be worth as much as Robert Covington was at last year's deadline or whenever that was, when he got two first-round picks or when Houston got two first-round picks for him. I mean, he really is one of the more valuable pieces in the league right now. Again, I don't want them to trade him, but just saying.
Yeah, I don't think they should trade him. I think that he, I don't know what he'll end up being, but just the fact that he can blow up and score like that is something. He's not going to do it every night. He may, when they are good, he may not do it hardly ever in the playoffs. But if they get, if you get one, I mean, we had that one Serge Ibaka Kendrick Perkins game where they went 11 for 11 from the field.
Yeah.
Like, won them the game against the Spurs. Like, sometimes you just need the one game from somebody. And if Shea or whoever we get in this draft or whoever else is on this team and we get into like a first round battle and we get a Dort 25 point game that wins them the game, like, that's a big deal to have a guy that can do that. There was never going to be an Andre Roberson game. There was never going to be a Thabo game, right?
Man, when like, Roberson would have like, never gonna when happen. Roberson had like 15 points, we were like, whoa, all right, let's go.
I know. I know. Did he just take a step forward? Like, I don't know. I mean, but there will be Dort games. There will be. And we had one. He almost won game 7 for the Thunder. There will be Dort games. And that is exciting. He doesn't have to be a star. However, I would love it if he was. But he doesn't have to be one.
It'd be really nice if he wanted to, Dort, if he wanted to be a star.
It'd be great. Lou, don't hold back. It would be, but man, just to know you have a guy that can go get you buckets that is not necessarily the one that's expected to. Because I expect the Thunder to add another 20-plus point scorer to this team.
Yeah, and that's one of the other similarities, because we've brought up this player comp before with Marcus Smart, because Marcus Smart is one of those guys. More think of him as like the heart and soul of the Celtics, which we kind of think of Dort that way for the Thunder. Think of him as a really good defensive player, but also Smart can have those blow-up games where all of a sudden, oh my gosh, Marcus Smart just hit 6 threes in this game and has like 25 points. So another way in which those two guys are kind of similar. I don't know if he has the kind of creation skills that Marcus Smart has yet. I mean, Marcus Smart was obviously like a really good point guard when he was at OSU. But they're, at least at the end of this year, we're going to get to see more of Dort as that primary creator, because there's not a lot. I mean, there are just times when it's like when Teo's not out there, like Dort can kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah, you compare those two. Marcus Smart in year 2 and Lou Dort in year 2. And Let me try to find per 36 numbers. Okay. So per 36, Lu Dort, 15.5 points per game. Marcus Smart, 12.
Yes.
Where they do differ, and you're right about this, is through assists. Marcus Smart per 36 is 4 assists per game. Lu's 2.
Yeah.
But then you look at the shooting numbers, like Lu's 38%, almost 39% for the field. That's not great. Marcus Smart, 34.
Wow.
Marcus Smart, 25% from three. Lu Dort, 33% from three. This is, to me, this is really, he could be that. Like, he really could be a Marcus Smart type of player. And one, I think that those type of guys are pretty affordable, typically. Like, defensive type of guys are more affordable than guys that'll go get you 30. And he's just kind of the perfect piece. I mean, you watched it last night, the Celtics beat the Blazers in Portland, and Smart is just all over the place. And when you have the two, they have their two scores, right? You have Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. It just leaves, basically all of his energy goes to making winning plays.
Right.
And that's what he did all night. And I think that's perhaps the evolution of Dort, is to use all of his energy on the defensive end to make winning plays and then score in spots and get better as a scorer. You can see, like, that path is there already. You don't even have to imagine it. Like, it is set there. And perhaps he can be more, because I don't want to limit him. And I know that the Thunder shouldn't limit him, you know, either in all of this. And I would hope that they wouldn't. But I think that you continue on the track that you're on with him, that you push him to be everything he can be. And if he is just Marcus Smart, which I think that you can almost safely say it at this point, that he's going to be that type of player, then wow, you got that guy undrafted. You just got to throw that guy on your team. You didn't have to expend any assets to get that guy.
Right. Like,
that is something.
That would be amazing. He is the player after Shea that you feel most confident about in terms of where they're going to be in 5 years. Because, I mean, we can say that Poku has a higher ceiling, sure, but Poku has a much longer path to get to that ceiling, whereas I think Dort's ceiling is very attainable, and maybe we're still underselling his ceiling. But yeah, I think he's going to fit in with anyone they bring in, and that's the great thing about the type of players that Sam has brought in so far. They can go best player available and not even really have to think twice about it. I mean, I think most teams should go best player available, but I understand when teams are kind of like, well, we have all these guards, like Cleveland, for instance. Like, if you're going to bring in another guard like Jalen Suggs into Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, and even Okoro there, like, you're going to have to make some decision at some point because there's just not going to be enough minutes to go around. But in the case of the Thunder, because so many of these guys have size, it doesn't really matter. They can do whatever they want. And we're seeing it now with, you know, Gabriel Deck coming over. I mean, they're just going to start throwing things out there. And a bunch of skilled guys all playing at once and see what happens. And I'm getting more and more excited.
I don't think I've talked to you about Deck.
Oh, let's break it down. Let's break down Gabriel Deck.
Hey, before we talk about Gabriel Deck, let's go to the stream. Let's take a quick break. And we're going to talk Gabriel Deck. So let's take a look and see who is watching today. We have Trey Brown, who's excited about the 6 best lottery odds. We have, let's see, people just saying stuff about Dort. the Haitian Harden, the Montreal Mamba.
Wow.
Let's see. Tell me where you're from, people. This is what this segment is all about. This is all about Dort from here. Tyler Field is in Midtown, OKC. We have Jamie Archer in Mexico. We have Chad Scott in UConn. We have the traveling teacher from Ethiopia. We have Jacob Kearns in Edmond. We have Chris in Tulsa. We have Augusto from the Dortress. Oh, gosh, we have a friend from Iceland who I can't read your name. Omar is the only part of that name I can read, but thank you for joining. We have We have Hermes from Greece. I remembered your name this time, even though I can't read it. We have Max, Automobile Alley, OKC. We have Wojciech in Poland. We have Zoe in Charleston, South Carolina. We have Alex Gatch, who says he wishes he was in Charleston, South Carolina. We have Dan Mayan in Rhode Island. We have, oh my gosh, we have tons of people in the stream today. Thanks so much for joining. Adve in New Jersey, if I don't see your name, I'm so sorry. Miroslav from Germany. We have, yeah, I love this. You guys are talking to each other in here. This is wonderful. This is great. We have Pedro from Brazil. We have VBZ in Piedmont. We have Benjamin hanging out on the door train. We have Giovanni in Houston. We have Michael in Omaha. We have Niner by Nature in Seattle, Washington. Thanks so much for listening from Seattle. Clouds in Belgium. Carpet from New York. Matthew in Missouri. Adam in Pennsylvania. Diego in Brazil. DTD Worldwide, Al. Falk in Denmark. Wow. Blown away.
Wow.
We also have our friend from Antarctica.
Woo!
They're really in Antarctica. Unbelievable. DTD actually worldwide. We have the Tall Shot OKC from Elemental Coffee downtown in OKC. Big shouts. Lawrence Field in Boston. Thanks so much for being here with us, you guys. We will be right back after this quick break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back from that quick break. Alex, let's talk Gabriel Deck, a.k.a. Gabby Deck, a.k.a. Tortue. Turtle, a.k.a. Tanquita.
Yeah. Shocking, you know, did not see coming. I think we all assumed that if they were going to bring in guys at the end of the season, it would be 10-day guys, you know, maybe some mm-hmm. more G-leaguers are out there. Something I feel like Houston should be doing at this point. They have one young guy, you know.
What are they doing?
I don't know. You know what? DJ Augustine's.
They could have had they could have had Tanquita.
Yeah, honestly, like bring in someone like that. They're playing DJ Augustine like big minutes. Okay, whatever. Houston. Yeah. I am just excited about what is happening because if OKC is going to get back to the mountaintop, which we didn't really get to the mountaintop, mm-hmm. but we got very close, I think they're going to have to take a different route. They're going to have to mm-hmm. figure out some. They're going to have to zig while the league is zagging, or zag while the league is zigging. They're going to have to do something different because mm-hmm. we've talked before about the disadvantages being in a small market. There's some disadvantages that are inherent there. There's also the new lottery odds, which decrease the benefits of tanking a little bit, even though there still are benefits there. And so they're going to have to figure out another route. And it does seem like they have an idea of what they want to do and what they want to be and what kind of system they want to develop. That in and of itself is really exciting because I think for a lot of other teams, it's more like we just hope we nail the lottery and then we'll just build around that player. I mean, take Cleveland, for mm-hmm. instance. Like, what is Cleveland? What's the plan there? It's like, well, we hope that Sexton and Garland work out. And I guess our identity would be like a really strong defensive team, but a lot of our defenders are old guys on a older timeline, whether it's like Larry Nance Jr. or guys like that. And so I don't think the path forward is as clear for a lot of other teams in OKC's kind of situation, Whereas with OKC, it seems like they have a very clear idea of what they want this system to be, and that might be the thing that kind of differentiates them from all these other teams and gives them gives them some advantages, because that's the whole point of this. Like, yes, we can talk about these disadvantages all day, but can you make your own luck in some way? Can you do things that no other team in the league is doing? And I think we can safely say that bringing in someone like Gabriel Deck is not something that anyone else in the league is doing or trying to do at this moment.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. And they're just finding guys that fit this mold of play really hard, can play multiple positions, can do lots of different things on the court, good passing. I mean, almost everybody on the team is a good passer for the most part. That's what they're looking for. And Deck fit that. He also helped them get to the salary floor, which is, I guess, a goal of theirs. And there's some stuff floating out there that the only reason that they signed Gabriel Deck to this deal is get to the salary floor. Well, like, to me, if that's the only thing you wanted, you just give Moses Brown like a really big front loaded contract and get yourself there, right? Like, you don't go out of your way to bring in a guy who's playing in Europe and talk him into coming over here and leave his team during like a big run for them. Like, you just find a way to do it here.
Yeah, it does seem like it's an unnecessarily big production, just if that was the only reason.
Right. Exactly. It is a ton of effort to go through to make that happen. Yeah, you just reward one of your guys if that's the only thing that you wanted to do. So they definitely want to get a look at what Gabriel Deck can do. I don't know when he'll be here. It's possible maybe he joins the team on Friday in Detroit. I really don't know. That's just a complete guess. But I'm excited to see what he can do. They're just going to, I mean, just like with everybody else on this team, they're just going to throw him out there and see what they can do. I mean, they had Jalen Horde, like, they signed him and they were like, immediately you play. They had Justin Robinson sign him that day. They're like, okay, you're going to play immediately today. So, you know, I'm excited to see him out there. And he seems like very Kenrich Williams-y to me. And if you can get multiple guys like that on your team, that's great. And also, the contract is non-guaranteed moving forward after this season. So they're going to give him more than just these 15 games or whatever it is he's going to play. But if maybe next season it's like, yeah, this isn't working out, like, you can just cut him loose and have no ramifications for it. So it's a great deal for him in that he gets to make a crap ton of money in comparison to what he was in Europe, and gets to try the NBA and see if he's a fit. And if he is, great. And if not, whatever. And I don't know, for whoever listened to the Dream Team, we had a guy on that was reporting on this deal, and he said that the Clippers tried to get Deck in the offseason when they brought over Batum, and they thought they could add another, you know, 3-4, you know, guy that plays hard, that makes winning plays. And so he's not just a random guy that the NBA hasn't had a radar for at all. You know, the Clippers, the team that's trying to win the title this year, wanted to bring him in.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And the other benefit of this system that they're building is I think it makes the roster more interchangeable, to where you don't have a situation like we had a few years ago where you have all these stars. You have Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony. But when Andre Roberson gets hurt, the system is so fragile that it can't withstand a loss of your fourth best player, probably even lower than that, like if you throw in Steven Adams into that as well, where it just everything falls apart. And all of a sudden they're having to build from scratch just because Andre Roberson isn't there. And I think this new system where all of these guys can do so many different things kind of protects you against something like that.
Mm. That's a really great point. I hadn't thought of that. You're right. Everything was toast after Roberson went down. Maybe the worst offensive player in the NBA that season.
Right.
But also maybe the best defensive player. Yeah, everything did completely fall apart. They signed Corey Brewer. And remember when Corey got hurt? I think it was one of the last games of the season, and he ended up being okay and be able to play in the playoffs. But I remember him, Corey, going out, And you think, and the thought of the fan base was, oh my gosh, how can we survive without Corey Brewer?
And we couldn't.
We couldn't. We couldn't with him. But I mean, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, this is, going back to this system, it is so interesting because when Sam Presti, when we first started learning about Sam Presti, like way back in the day, all you heard was that this guy is from the Spurs system. Like he idolizes that Spurs system. He wants to build that Spurs system mm-hmm. in Oklahoma City. But then through fortunate events, he ended up getting stars that were just so higher wattage than anything San Antonio has ever had. I mean, Tim Duncan yep. is obviously an all-time player, but he is not in like personality-wise or in like stardom-wise on the level that KD and Russell Westbrook were. And so I think we're now finally seeing that dream coming true, like that idea of building Spurs 2, you know, in Oklahoma City. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that gets me really excited because it's one of the reasons why that works so well for the Spurs is because they were the only ones doing it. And so they were getting first yep. dibs on all of these guys that the rest of the league just wasn't paying attention to. And through that, mm-hmm. they were able to find all these diamonds in the rough that the rest of the league would have never looked at. And as a result, they were way better than they probably should have been during that time, given like mm-hmm. where those first round picks were, you know?
No doubt. And they have a ton of international players on their team already, and they're looking for more. And perhaps that, and you brought this up in our text thread, like perhaps that is a strategy that you take. Because I'd be a little floored if Jokic left Denver, right? You know, Dirk never left Dallas. I think that there is something. European players are just wired differently when it comes to glamour markets and stuff like that. And not all of them are, but it seems like a lot of them are, though. And so maybe if you strike gold with one of these guys, whether it's Maladon or like Dortz is an international player, Pokuševski, so any of those guys, if you strike gold with any of those guys, perhaps you have a better chance to get them to stay, because it does seem like the American players understand like LA and New York and those places to just be better places for them to be. And I'm not saying that it's certainly possible that Poku becomes a star and then is like, yeah, I want to go play for the Lakers.
Yeah. You know,
like that's certainly possible, but you just wonder if that's if that is any part of the thinking, or if it's just, hey, we saw what Denver did, and we are going to scout internationally better than anybody else. And I think the Thunder are doing, obviously the Thunder have done that. You look at the roster, they have done a very good job scouting internationally. And you just wonder if that's a part of the strategy too. Just like, we're going to do this better than everybody else. Not everybody is willing to put in the work to go watch these guys play, to get to know them, to do all the things you need to do. And we will be willing, and we will make that happen. To me, that's kind of what it looks like with this team.
And that's why this upcoming draft is going to be so interesting, outside of whatever that top pick ends up being or where it ends up landing. But I'm really interested to see, you know, what if they don't get the Houston pick and they end up at 17 and 32? Mm-hmm. Who are they taking with those picks? What kind of players are they targeting? Because we've talked about from the outsider's perspective, the shift in who Sam Presti seems to be targeting in the draft. And it'll just be interesting to see it happen in this draft. By the way, Andrew, I was looking at the Ringer's updated lottery odds.
Mm-hmm.
The Thunder's chance of having at least one top five pick, 77%.
That's a percentage that makes me feel comfortable.
The next closest, the Orlando Magic, because the Bulls have been so bad. So now that pick is like a more realistic lottery pick.
Mm. I feel bad for Bulls fans.
I guess I feel bad for Bulls fans. I don't feel bad for the Bulls. Like,
No. I don't either. I don't feel bad for the Bulls at all. But if you make this move and you're just, it's just ends up being a lateral move, you're just like, oh no, what have we done?
And it completely changes the Magic's future. I mean, the Magic, if they just stay where they are right now, which I think they're in third, and they could get something like the third pick and the 10th pick, incredible. Like, that's...
Yeah, and you just add that to the young guys you already have. And, like, Wendell Carter's looks pretty good.
I don't know about that. He's on my fantasy team. I've been disappointed. I've been waiting for him to break out
some,
forever.
He's had some moments, though.
He's had some moments, but he's always had some moments. I want him to be consistent. Yeah. I need 10 rebounds a game from him, Andrew.
Oh, I don't think you're getting that. You could have had it from Cantor, man. Cantor's up there gobbling boards.
Yeah, he is gobbling boards.
let's take a look at Tankathon real quick. Let's see exactly where we're at for OKC. So we have the Thunder sitting just firmly in the sixth spot. Well, not firmly. They're sitting in the sixth spot. You have Washington and Toronto at 7 and 8. God, Toronto, man. Like, they just can't get it together. I just want them to just get some healthy space between the Thunder and the Toronto Raptors, right? I mean, they lost to that Hawks team last night. I mentioned that earlier. They really didn't have much of a chance in the game. Malachi Flynn just went off at the end of the game, and it looked close, but it really wasn't that close. Then you had the Raptors had a chance. I think they were on like a 2-on-1 fast break. Lowry throws it to Pascal. This is against the Knicks. Pascal Siakam double dribbles.
Oh, yeah.
Turns the ball over. Game is over. I mean, just these... I mean, if you're a Raptors fan, you just have to be beating your head against the wall this whole season. Like, it's just been misery. They're 21 and 34. And they don't have a 21 and 34 roster. Like, they should be closer to 500.
Yeah, I mean, and on the flip side... At some point, as a Toronto fan, you're probably like, if we're going to be this bad, like, let's just be bad for this season. But yes, they've just kind of been hovering in that, like, 7 to 10 range, which, mm-hmm. you know, it's not really where you want to be. And they have the fifth hardest remaining schedule, I was just looking at. So, yes, I'm worried about Toronto. Fred VanVleet is still out. I'm hoping if he can come back soon that they'll be able to pick up a couple wins here or there. But yeah, they are more concerning to me than Washington, who I think Washington has proven themselves to, like, at least get up for these big games. They beat the Warriors on that crazy 4-point play from Bradley Beal. I think it was last Friday. And I just have faith that Washington, if Beal and Westbrook are healthy, are going to win enough games to stay above the Thunder.
Yeah, Washington... They're not good still, but they're 5-5 in their last 10, and that's good enough, right? Like, that's good enough to, like, steer clear of the Thunder, who have the Thunder have the longest losing streak in the NBA right now, tied with Sacramento, which is just another, like, really depressing statement, because this Kings should not be this bad. But they've lost 7 in a row, easily their longest losing streak. Feels like a losing streak of the season. And yeah, it finally feels like they're settling into where they need to be. How long do you think this losing streak goes, Alex? Does it stop at 7? Does it stop at 8?
I definitely have the sense that they're going to win one within this next stretch of games. Which game is it? I don't know. I guess I would go... I don't think they'll beat the Warriors. The Warriors are playing a little better right now. James Wiseman's out for the rest of the season, which I actually think might help the Warriors just a little bit. There's been more focus on just letting Steph be Steph and not necessarily trying to develop James Wiseman every single game. So I actually think the Warriors probably will win tonight. But yeah, one of those Detroit, Toronto, Washington, even Indiana... Washington games. I mean, they could win 3 of those games and it wouldn't shock me. Which is terrifying.
Those games are all on the road. I think it is a huge blessing to the tanking community that the Toronto Washington is a back to back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that helps a little.
Like, the Wizards at least feels like a schedule loss. Because it's your third game in 4 nights and back to back. It's like, okay, Maybe we can hand because that these games, especially Toronto and Washington, are like doubly important. Because if you beat Washington, you're gonna flip flop with them in the standings,
yeah.
Right? Same thing with Toronto. You have to lose. Those are games. Those are like must. I don't know if I've ever said this statement, but those are must lose games.
Well, and it makes you think about if Shea was healthy, and if they were trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this schedule to end the season, and we've talked about it before. At the very end of the season, they get three games against the Kings. Like,
yeah,
they could be much better than 500 in this final stretch if they were playing all their guys. Because this is not a difficult stretch.
No, I mean, if they're playing Horford and Muscala and SGA,
yeah,
they might be 500 the rest of the way.
Yeah. So it's getting dicey. We'll see. I mean, I was not worried at all until last night's game. And that probably shouldn't make me that worried because it's like, I don't want to say a once in a lifetime game, but it's certainly like once in a season game from Lu Dort hitting 7 threes in a game.
Yeah. I'm still not worried because the game never felt like the Thunder were going to actually do something.
Well, it did in the first quarter. When they're up like 18.
I'm never worried about first quarter stuff with this team. They play too many young guys. They play too many inexperienced guys for them to hold on to that. Especially against a team like Utah.
Yeah.
And I think some of that's like, all right, well, we're playing a SGA-less Thunder. Great. Let's just go out. Let's roll the ball out and we'll win. And then Dort goes off like, oh, okay. In the second half, like, okay, we have to play. And then they beat them in the third quarter, 33-16. And then the game was over.
Yeah.
And yes, the Thunder made it this late run that made the game look a lot closer than it really was. And it was actually like pretty entertaining to watch. But to me, if that game, I don't know. To me, there was just never really a question of what was going to happen in that game. The Jazz are too good to let that team beat them. Now maybe, I mean, Washington is definitely not too good. But I don't know if they get off to that kind of hot start. And here's where the play-in does help the Thunder, is that there's going to be some teams that want to get to the play-in. Golden State's one of them. The Thunder played Golden State 3 times in this last stretch. They definitely want to get to the play-in. I still think Toronto and Washington are still within striking distance of the play-in. I think they want to get there, certainly. You have Philly and Boston, who are still trying to kind of prove themselves. Like, the Thunder really don't stand a chance against Philly. Boston has a ton of ground to make up to get to where they want to go. And so, like, that's good. Indiana still wants to be in the mix. The Pelicans have a chance at the play-in. They play Indiana again. They play Phoenix. Phoenix should wallop them. The only one that I question, here's the ones that I question are Sacramento, who they play 3 times in the last 2 weeks of the season. And then you have the last 2 games, Utah and the Clippers. And the question with those is, like, who plays? Like, do they play everybody in those games?
Yeah, do they care at that point?
Do the Thunder play everybody in those games too? Because there's certainly a thing. And I think Shea will be evaluated in the next few days again. That's when he's set to be evaluated. It was the middle of April, and that is now. And if they say, wow, you look great, let's go, he'll probably play. If they say you need 2 more weeks, I think they should shut him down.
Yeah.
I think it should be completely over because we saw what happened to Jamal Murray. And imagine if that happened to Shea. Like, if Shea tore his ACL against the Kings on May 4th.
Yeah, that sets you back a year in terms of your team's development.
You don't do it. You don't do it. You just don't. The question is just for what? And if people are like, well, the Thunder are just doing this so they can tank, they're also doing it to preserve Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's career.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing, like, this season, because there are so many games. Go look at the schedule. They have one more 2-day gap between games. One more until May 16th. They go a whole month without having a two-day break. An entire month. Like, that's crazy. I get a two-day break every week.
It's pretty good.
They don't get it. And I don't even have to do it. I'm just sitting here. Those guys don't. They're on an airplane. They play three more games at home this month. They have half the month left. They play three at home. They are traveling like crazy. They go to Detroit, to Tampa. They go to Washington. They go to Indiana, back to OKC. They go to Philly. They go to Boston, back to OKC. That's the rest of this month. Like, that's crazy. To me, I just wouldn't even subject Shea to it. I wouldn't. To me, it's not worth it. One, on the tanking side, as someone who wants them to tank, yes, please don't play Shea. But also, as somebody who values Shea and thinks he's the future of this franchise, don't play him. Don't do it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
And the injury that he has, plantar fasciitis, I mean, that is like a notoriously difficult to treat, difficult to gauge when a person should come back. I remember when Joakim Noah had plantar fasciitis, and it was just like, they could never figure out like when is the best time to come back, because all it takes is like one little tweak and you're kind of set back a couple weeks. So yeah, I'm fine with letting him rest, especially if one of his goals this summer is to play with Team Canada. Like, get him 100% for that, if that's super important to him. Because I just don't know what is left for him to prove this season. I mean, there's a lot of guys on this roster who do have things to prove, especially as you and Mikey talked about, looking ahead at the guys they're going to be bringing from the draft, maybe bringing in some international players. These guys on the roster right now are trying to prove that they belong to be on this roster for next season. A lot of these guys have non-guaranteed deals or are easily movable. So there's plenty reason. There's plenty of guys who need playing time right now outside of Shea.
So I
would agree with that. The one question I did have, I was looking back at their schedule. So the first game of the season against Houston, and then the Sixers game that got postponed, are those getting made up, or have they been made up? And I didn't realize it.
The Philly game on Saturday was the makeup game.
And then what about the Houston game?
Mm-hmm. I believe that's already been done.
Okay. I wanted to make sure that we didn't have to play Houston again.
Yeah. No. They don't. I think that was the 21st of March was when they made that up. Yeah, no worries about that at all. Yeah, and you mentioned international players. Like, Deck is certainly a guy, too, that will come over, and I think there will be guys on this team, like a Josh Hall. Like, Josh Hall's looking over at him like, oh, gosh, he's probably taking my spot.
Right.
And so, like, they need to play Josh Hall, and they need to see what he's got. And so I wouldn't be surprised. He only saw 15 minutes from last night, but there may be a few games in here where he gets 25 minutes. Just to say, okay, what is?
And honestly, this is why guys fall through the cracks, because the team they're on is more focused on playing the veterans and the established players and not giving those guys at the end of the bench a real shot in the NBA. And so they never really see what they do in real gameplay. And so they end up cutting them. They go to another team, all of a sudden become like Robert Covington or whatever other player you want to bring up, Hassan Whiteside, you know, all these guys who are at the end of a roster, didn't really get a lot of playing time at their first stop. And then all of a sudden, Moses Malone played 6 minutes, as we discussed last week on Slam and Jam. And then all of a sudden become really good players in another situation. So I think there's a lot of value in giving those guys a lot of run at the end of the season, just to make sure, like, is there something here? You don't really know just from practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about D'Anthony Melton, who's on the Grizzlies, who's been awesome for them. He was just given away. Chris Middleton.
Oh, man,
A lot of people don't remember. Detroit had Chris Middleton.
Threw him in.
They just threw him into a trade because they didn't know what he was. Can you imagine? It
happened with Tobias Harris, too, when he got traded.
With Tobias Harris? Yeah. Yes. Yes. They just gave him to Orlando.
Yeah, I couldn't remember which way that trade went. If it was Orlando sending him to the Bucks. There were so many Bucks Orlando trades, because like JJ Redick was back then.
Yes, it was JJ Redick to the Bucks for Tobias Harris. Okay. And it was like the rental of JJ Redick.
Yeah,
is what it was. They rented him for the rest of the season, and the price they paid was Tobias Harris.
Max player Tobias Harris.
Max, maybe it was a good thing. Ultimately. I don't know. Who's to say? There was a report about Micić and his agent saying that there's nothing. He was actually like seemed angry about the reports. So just something to keep in mind, like that deal is not done. It has not been signed. And until it's signed, it's really nothing to worry about one way or the other. I believe they can negotiate during free agency or perhaps, I actually don't even know when they can negotiate. Perhaps it's after the Mitch's season, but that deal's not done. So we will move forward as if he's not on the team until we know he's going to be on the team.
Yeah, and I think so if you saw that quote I posted on Twitter from an interview he gave last November, he said, basically, I don't really care about going to the NBA. Like, that's not one of my dreams. If I go there, it's going to be because I'm going to a really good system and I'm going to have, like, a guaranteed role. So from his perspective, he might be looking at this like, let me see what the Thunder do in the draft this summer. Let me see who they bring in. Is there actually going to be a spot for me on this team? Is it worth uprooting my life, moving to Oklahoma City to only get, you know, 10 minutes a game? Or can the Thunder tell him, no, you're going to be like a key part of our rotation. Here's what, how many minutes you're going to play, all that, that convinces him to come over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no clue. To me, it's made no sense from the beginning. I've always been like, huh? About it. But who knows? Who knows what the plan is? I don't know what the plan is. I still think the plan is largely based around Shea and the draft. Like, to me, that's the plan that makes way more sense. When you throw Micić in there, it's like, what? What are they? What's going on here? So, not done. We probably really won't even talk about him until there's actual news about him again. So, just a little housekeeping note there. Hope you guys have a great, great day. The Raptors have announced that Kyle Lowry, Gary Trent, and Fred VanVleet are all out against San Antonio tonight. So. No!
Come on,
Raptors. We need you. We need you, Raptors. Shoot. Thanks so much for listening. If you have been following along, we've had maybe more people here on the stream than we've had ever. So thanks for joining in. We really appreciate it. We have Brian in Singapore. We have Hoops Talk 69 on the moon, as always. Love the chat. Love that you guys are talking to each other in the chat. Love it. Andrew from Tulsa. We have Sense from DK. We have that Poku card. It's a beautiful Poku card. We have Christian from South London. We have Paul Chi in Jamaica. Love that. We have Asbjorn in Denmark. Thank you so much. We have Cal Tran who says, slam a jam, a slam, Slandrew. Brody in Tulsa. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening and for joining in. We have White Black from Morocco. What is up? You guys are the best. Thanks so much for listening. Make sure you listen to our Saturday Slam Jam show. We're talking Warriors this week.
Yeah.
Should be very fun. I think I've got Ethan Strauss locked in for the pod. So that should be an all-timer. Also, listen to the Daily Ding. You can listen to me today on the Daily Ding with Mo Dekeel, but listen to me on the Daily Ding tomorrow. Subscribe to the channel. I've got a very special guest that I'm very excited about on that. So go to, you can search NBA Daily Ding on your podcast catcher. Subscribe. Have a great day. We'll talk to you guys again on Friday. Oh, Andy Clegg.